Showtime.
Blog Talk Radio.
That's a long pause of silence.
Okay. Yeah, that's awkward. Talk about those awkward pauses.
It's the Late Show with Brandy Weatherman.
Yeah. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Up this morning, looking for my shoes. Looked behind the trunk, found the hesitation blues. Lordy, tell me how long.
Lordy, tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate? Take me rock away from here. Lordy, tell me how long.
Lordy, tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate?
We hit 95 today.
What? I would love to hit 95 today.
No, we only got up to like 77 here in Michigan, so.
77?
Yep. It's kind of a cool front
move. I don't know. I just don't understand how you're living through that heat. I mean,
well, it's the rain we've had at least two or three times a day, two or three times a week for the last 2 months. That's really throwing things off.
Well, don't worry. The snow will be coming soon, and then, you know.
Oh, yeah, I ain't bitching about the heat. I hate winter. As I got older, I hate winter.
I was the only – I spent a year in Ohio and Michigan, and I spent a winter in Michigan. When we came back to South Carolina, everybody's like, hey, it's going to snow. Yay. I'm like, screw you. You have no idea. Of course, it's only snows in South Carolina for about 2 hours, and it's melted away. And then it's just slush.
And then y'all go crazy trying to drive in it because you don't know how to drive in it. And a little dusting. Jesus. We get a foot whistle driving through it.
The state
shuts down.
That's
only a foot. We got to do it a few weeks ago.
If there is one snowflake in South Carolina, the state shuts down. You are not allowed to go to school. You're done. Forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's make a couple of show announcements here. I love talking to you. I love talking about this stuff. All right. Next week, we have got Marjorie Dehay. Dehay. I spelled her name wrong on the show page earlier.
Well, that wouldn't be us, Francie.
Dehay, not H. But she's really sweet about it. That is on the 8th. William.
I hope she is.
She's
Probably she'll be forgiving.
Dehay. Okay, that did not sound right. She's not decaying, everybody. She's really sweet. You guys are going to love her.
We got it. We're good.
Okay. Hey, look, I don't know if I'm drinking bull sperm or bull urine. We're just going to go with it. All right. And William, on the 15th.
Huh?
The 15th, you got your announce the guest.
Yep, on the 15th, we're going to have Michelle Murray.
All right.
Author and extraordinaire, and even with the upcoming launch of a fashion line, among other little goodies and tidbits we'll be learning about.
Cool.
Very.
Real entrepreneur.
Then on the 22nd, we have got Eddie. I pronounced it wrong the last time he was on the show. Eddie Bergzell. He's going to kill me if he's listening tonight. Anyway, Eddie, he's great filmmaker, loves, has a passion. It's going to be a great... we're not fully booked. There's 5 weeks in August. We need somebody on the 29th. Okay, we got to bring on Chuck. Tom.
Yo.
Why JL, William, and I were sitting on our thumbs. You had one hell of a weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about
a great
it in
weekend.
3 minutes or less. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I was at Motor City Nightmares in Novi, Michigan at the Novi Sheraton. And in attendance were Dee Wallace, Liam Forsythe, Andrew Divac, Courtney Gaines, Malcolm McDowell, a whole slew of them. And I sold 50 books, all black bedsheet books.
Nice.
A couple away for charity. William Forsythe's an avid reader, so I give him a couple books every time. And Dee Wallace was the one who inspired me, told me to finish writing In Rod We Trust. So, and I did, and I gave her a copy. She wanted one. And like I said, I sold 50 books. It was a great weekend. Had a lot of repeat customers. Thank God for them. They come back every year and ask me what I have next year, or I didn't get this one, you know, yet, and they come back, and it's an honor and privilege to keep entertaining them, because it seems like a 60%+ or more is repeat customers, and I made some new ones this year, too, or they heard about it. And, oh, and a guy named Daniel Roebuck, he was a character actor on Lost. He had a book when I was up of mine from Flint Horror Con some years ago, at least 5 to 7 years ago. And he, oh, this is Tom Sawyer. He's a great, he's a famous writer. I go, I don't know about famous, but that compelled some other people to buy my book. So it was kind of nice having a couple actors come up to your table and, you know, talk to you, you know, like you're on par with them. They just, they treat you like you're, you know, like one of them or something. So it was really nice. It's, and then when they say, hey, Tom's a great, good writer, so that's really strokes the ego. It makes you feel good and feel like you're, you know, accomplishing something, you know?
Oh,
but
yeah.
A lot of great definitely. Weekend. I think I made more money this weekend at Motor City Nightmares than I ever before. Didn't sell more books, but I sold more, made more money. So I know it's kind of a,
well,
sounds funny,
so,
but
so here's
true.
So here's the $10 million question. You know, sorry for the interruption, but it had to be asked.
No problem.
So, since you were hanging out with Malcolm McDowell, did you were you able to swing into the milk bar at all, or no?
Oh no, that guy must have had five. It seemed like he had about 100 different pictures that people could buy because he's been in so many roles. He couldn't really get near. It was a lot of people around to see him, but he was seemed friendly enough and walked by and, you know, hey, you know, waved and said hi. And, you know, this is kind of a, I want to say it's an intimate but kind of laid-back convention because you're not cordoned off from the celebrities. They're there. I think if they ever had a stalker issue, I think all the vendors would probably kill the guy that tried to hurt one of them celebrities there because they're so well thought of and they feel like everybody feels kind of like family there. It's kind of a good, friendly, you know, it's just,
those,
you know, they walk around and see
the
vendors
best.
And, yeah, the villains, I mean, we had all the villains there, and they're just a down-to-earth friendly. They come by and say hi, and how you doing this weekend, and, you know. So,
yeah,
I love this convention because it's so laid back and so intimate, and it's like D. Wallace said a few years ago, it's like old home week. You see all your old friends you see every year here at this one, and, you know, that's kind of what it's like, so. It's kind of
nice.
The centerpiece of my convention season.
Yeah, oh, I do remember really my first convention, and that was the Miss Misery Days of Terror. And it was, you're exactly right. It is great. Yeah, I mean, we had Chainsaw Sally. We had the first Jason. I mean, I got him laid, by the way.
not with her,
there.
But probably, right?
Yeah, just throwing it out there. And by the way, I did say if I get you laid, you're going to do a show. So he owes me a show. But anyways, it was a friendly convention. And the last night, everybody got together. And we had a party at the hotel where they were all staying in the cathedral. Eileen Dietz and everybody was there, and everybody was drinking, and they presented. I was actually completely shocked about this. Everybody at the convention, they presented me with a cherry Southern Comfort fifth of alcohol, and they all signed it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Nick
nice.
And I was the bartender. Yeah, Nick and I was the bartender. Yeah, the first Jason, everybody signed it. Everybody that was at that convention, Chainsaw Sally, oh, we still got that bottle. And I didn't drink that alcohol. I was like, I really appreciate it. I don't drink this. I've never tried it. So shots are on me, and they're all like, yeah! So we all drank that fifth.
Oh. Yeah.
But yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Nice,
I love
show.
Those kind of conventions.
It seems like the villains are always the guys that play the heavies, the villains. You know, like, I mean, you could hardly get near them when once the crowd came in. It was like, I mean, these I think the people there, the vendors especially, really love the celebrities that are there because they help pull in people to, you know, once they get done their autographs, they're shopping around and looking around. And when they come over to your table and start talking to you and everything, I mean, Dee Wallace is a sweetheart. William Forsythe, for all the heavies he's played, he's just an all-around good guy. And they all were. They were all, you get in a conversation with one of them and then a couple of us join in or, you know, and it's just, wow, it just, you know, you don't necessarily need the big stars to have a good time. So I have to admit, I didn't go to the after party Saturday night because I was just plain tired. And I've been there, done that, and it's like, man, if I get drinking one or two, it's going to be lead to about 8 or 10, and you know, and so or more. So it's like, yeah, I'll forego that. Maybe next time.
But hey, at least you had fun. That's what matters.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I mean, a lot of new people. You know, I had a kid come up, wanted a donation for a, you know, they were taking, you know, looking for donations for their fundraiser. So I kind of gave them a book, and then one poor kid didn't have enough money for the book, so I just gave him one anyways. He's a science fiction fan, so it was like,
nice.
You know, my experience has been they'll come back the next time if they like it. So, you know, that's.
And plus,
know.
Not to mention, you're giving the gift of reading to a child, if you think about that, too, that way.
You know, I figure a nice gesture, you know, you always kind of try to pay it forward, too. So, you know,
yes, exactly.
It comes back to you tenfold.
That is actually, okay, my bull sperm or urine is getting hot, which means that we've kept our guests, Chuck, on hold a little bit too long.
Okay, sorry.
No, not that I'm complaining, Tom. That was great. I was just trying to think how we can bring him on. Okay, so without further ado, author, musician, South Carolinian, Chuck. Oh my gosh, seriously? I cannot believe we're... Chuck, you are live. How are you?
I am great. You left out actor and filmmaker. But other than that, yeah, you did pretty good on that, Francis. It's the bull sperm talking, right?
I gotta warn you ahead of time, and these three men can vouch for me, JL, everybody, William, Tom. If I get 50% of it right, we're having a good night.
Yeah.
And
that's
Tom, by the
sure.
way, that sounds like a great convention. May have to try to come up there and do that with you sometime. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, that'd be cool, yeah.
And on top of that, Daniel Roebuck is in one of my favorite movies ever. There's a movie called Dudes with Daniel Roebuck and John Cryer from like the late 80s, early 90s. Excellent movie. You'll have to dig to find it. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah.
No, not yet. I haven't seen
it yet. It's an amazing movie. Penelope Spheres is one of her first films. So it's a great film.
Yeah, Daniel was just like, there's next a couple other celebrities. Go, oh, Tom's a famous writer. It's like, well, I'm not famous. Only my name is. But, you know, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
I ended up giving
him a book, too, just because he gave me the free pub and the props, you know.
He was the only actor to pull off a mohawk in multiple movies in Hollywood, say.
So. Okay.
He deserves some props. Okay,
I got
so
a confession to make.
Yeah.
I had a huge crush on John Cryer.
I think we all did, Francis.
forget Blaine. What is he, an appliance? Give me Ducky. I'll take Ducky over Blaine any day.
Well, hey, I mean, you know, Ducky was like one of us. You know, the full outcast, that's all.
Exactly. And probably most people listening to this qualify, right?
Exactly.
So, we were talking about the weather in... What is it in South Carolina? Because you're in South Carolina. Please tell me I got that right. I know I got that one right.
Yes, I'm in South Carolina, upstate. So it's 90s today, I think, low 90s. I was inside pretty much all day, so I really it didn't bother me a lot. I had a theater show today, so we closed a 2-week theater run today. So I did that. Then I came home and just kind of chilled the rest of the day, waiting on this call.
Well, cool. we're glad that you waited on. So you got this, and well, first of all, let's bring it back to the beginning, because Joe Mo was a guest on our show last week, and it turns out that Joe Mo introduced you to Nicholas Grabowski, because Joe Mo, poor thing, is now got a kidney stone.
I know, I saw that. I hated that. I sent him snarky messages, and I hope he appreciated them.
Yeah, he's got a good sense of humor. I asked him yesterday, I messaged him today. I was like, so when are you going to pass the stone? He goes, hopefully really soon.
Yeah, I so think I sent him the message, this too shall pass.
Jamie, it looks like he's got a good sense of humor about it, but it looks, and I hate it because it seems like it happened right after he did our show. He was in the emergency room, I think, right after he did the show.
Yeah, like 12 hours later.
Yeah, and then you break your wrist.
Is there a curse of the Francie show?
That's what I was thinking. You break your wrist.
I crashed a car this week. Joe Mo gets kidney stones. We were both talking on your show last week. I don't know about this, Francie. I'm out of here.
Bless you.
Better safe than sorry.
Chuck.
Guess
I
what you got coming there, Tom?
Yeah.
I do not have a voodoo doll. There's no voodoo doll here.
Okay, get ready. Francie's going to get desperate, Tom, and then we're going to get... Guess what? We have our new guest. It's Bob from accounting.
Well, here's the deal.
Yeah.
If anything else happens to Chuck, JL, William, Tom, and I will promise that we will wear a mask for next week's show.
Now, I'll raise stakes. Okay, I have two of my Hellraiser masks. I also have a mask based off of Iron Maiden's Number of the Beast, and also one from Full Cheese Zombies. So, by all means, feel free to pick a choice.
Yeah. I have a Twilight Zone
I've been
mask,
wanting
so.
To wear my Jason mask anywhere that it requires it. I've been wanting to wear one of my Jason masks in, but, you know, you can't do it without wearing the full, you know, you got to go the full 100%. You have to put on the jumpsuit and everything. So.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Otherwise, she will just look at you like, what the
fuck? Well, that's she just turned around and be like, I'm sorry, but the sign said full face covering.
Exactly.
I will
just,
say
just
right
trying to
now,
be a good American, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say here in California, this isn't even a hot spot, but like the company stores like Walmart, I wear my mask anyways. I'm vaccinated. I don't want the argument. You know, the mask isn't going to bother me anyways. And apparently this Delta thing's breaking out, and, you know, people are like, I don't care.
It does bother me because I'm literally allergic to them.
Oh.
When I have to wear them for extended periods of time, my face breaks out into, like, literally Freddy Krueger style. And I've had to get antibiotics twice for that. So, yes, I prefer to stay away from the mask when at all possible. I have been vaccinated. Also had the crap last year. I highly recommend people get the vaccination. We said we weren't going to get political on this show. How the hell does this happen?
Vaccinated. Well, this isn't really political. This isn't really political. Like, we're not saying yay or nay. You know, we're not going to do it. Yes, we are.
I highly recommend the mask and think you're I highly recommend the vaccination and think you're an idiot if you don't get it. However, I also highly recommend people having the freedom of choice in this country as long as possible. And I think that should be up to an individual decision. Boom, I'm done with my political stuff.
Exactly. If you don't like what they're saying, walk away. Like Jerry Springer used to say when people complained about the show, okay, you don't like my show, change the channel.
Change the station.
That's all you got to do.
I didn't care what I know.
No, don't change the channel.
Which I did every time I saw Jerry Springer, right?
See, that's all you got to do. Change the channel. Okay, move on. All right, so let's talk about more book, Chuck.
Yes.
Which, by the way, it would be terrible if I said huge. I mean, how do you describe it? I like Charlie Manson. I like movies about. You know, if you say, "Hey, I like Charlie Manson stories," people are gonna be like. They're going to be like.
The difference is you're saying it out loud and they're saying it behind closed doors. That's the biggest difference. I mean, there's a reason that people are still fascinated with this case 50 years later.
What would you say that main reason is, Chuck?
I don't think there is one main reason. I think there's multiple main reasons. You know, you've got everything.
He killed the 60s is what they said. Is he single-handedly...
Was in the flower power.
Yeah, I think that's giving him more credit than he deserves. There was a lot of things going on in the end of the 60s, and I cover all those in the book. There's a few people that have read the book that are children of the 60s who grew up in that area, quite a few that grew up even in the area that the murders and everything happened, that have read the book and said, man, it's like you were there. You know, you captured exactly what it was really like then, and it's like you were there, which is one of the biggest compliments I've received. But that's what I tried to do. I spent 7 years researching that book. In fact, when I first started researching, it wasn't even my intention to write a book about it. It was for my own personal interest and for my own personal curiosity. And then when, you know, I'm looking around and I have like half a bookshelf full of notes and books and videos and, you know, three or four large 2 or 3 inch spiral notebooks full of my own personal notes and stuff, I go, maybe I should share this with people.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the joys of research.
Exactly.
You know,
so from now on, I plan on every book I do from now on being entirely fictional.
it was fun, but
yeah, I only have so long left. If I spend, you know, I think 7 years in research and then another year and a half or so getting it done, then another approximately 6-8 months after I turned it into Nick to get it published, you know, you're looking at 8 or 9 years there. I'm thinking I'd like to turn out more than 2 or 3 books before the end of my life, you know.
I want to get back to the Charles Manson book. I have not read it yet. I'm going to read it because I did say, Nick, when you get a copy of it, please put it in my hands because I want to read it because, you know, I'm fascinated. I watched all the Charles Manson movies. I've seen all of his, when he's up for parole. Live on court TV. You know, it's like they said.
Yes,
I've watched
every parole hearing.
Yeah,
I watched every parole hearing. I read every transcript.
Yeah, he just got to the point. He's like, why am I even here? You're not going to release me. You're not going to kill me. Come on,
exactly.
You're going to kill Charles Manson.
And he was smart enough to know that.
Exactly.
Yeah, he was smart enough to know that.
Yeah, people.
But it's all. You know, it's the joy of the television part, that's all. Hey, he's still alive.
Well, they were going through the motions. They knew they were never going to let him out. What a lot of people don't know and what is interesting about this, what I try to tell in the book, now the book is told through the eyes of a fictional character. He's a teenager from South Carolina that leaves. His life kind of falls apart. His best friend dies in Vietnam. His girlfriend dumps him. And so he just wants to start life over and decides to go all the way across the country. He hears about the Summer of Love in San Francisco and decides, this is what I need to do. I've been, you know, a good boy all this time. I thought I would grow up and marry the girl that my high school sweetheart, and we'd have 2.5 kids and a dog, and, you know, live down the street from my parents and work at the same factory that my dad worked for 25 years. And then when everything fell apart, he just decides, okay, I'm scratching and I'm doing everything differently now.
Okay.
So the story is told through his eyes, but I feel like I tell the most accurate, truthful telling of what really happened that has been put out for mass market publication and has been put for the general public. There's a couple of books out there that have a lot of this information, but they're a lot more for the hardcore Manson fan, the hardcore. And when I say fan, I don't mean fan as in people who think he was a great guy or worship him or anything like that. When I say fan, I'm talking about people who have an intense interest, like myself. I think he was a fascinating human being. He's a fascinating individual. And the murders were only scratched the surface. What most people knew and saw of him was just a very small facet of the person that he was. And so I tried to dive into, okay, if I were Shep, my main character, if I were him, how would I have reacted in this same situation? You know,
nice.
And that's what I tried to tell that story from. And a lot of that information of how would I have reacted came from people who were there and how they reacted.
Wow.
Chuck, I will say this much. When it comes to putting this together, you know, first of all, you already have captured my interest, but I can tell you this much speaking about with on Francie's end, because normally she and I would have a late night prep meeting, like at least a couple days before the show and everything else. And she was so excited to hear that you were going to be on the show that she kind of flubbed up on her words, and it was so funny because she was like, it's going to be so awesome. Charles Manson's right-hand man is going to be on the show Sunday night. I'm like, we're doing a prison interview? It's like, no. I'm like, wait, he was paroled? No, but he's from South Carolina, though. So, and I'm from South Carolina. I'm like, okay, so how are we going to interview him? Well, he's calling into the show.
Well, and see, right there, a big misnomer, a lot of people think, I mean, the title itself is a bit of a backhanded slap at the misconceptions that people have about the case and about Manson in general, in the fact that, you know, people say, oh, right-hand man, you must be talking about Tex Watson. Well, no, I'm not talking about Tex Watson. I created a fictional right-hand man because Charles Manson didn't trust anyone. There was no right-hand man in Charlie's thing.
No.
You know, every guy at the ranch thought he was Charlie's best friend because Charlie wanted everyone to think they were your best friend because he didn't trust any of them.
There was no such thing as
a right-hand man.
And that's a lot of things. I mean, people say, oh, he was charismatic. But if you think about it, to have that much charisma on, they're saying, oh, they're weak-minded people. No, they were not real. But the thing is he made himself to be everybody's best friend. And that does take a lot of charisma. I mean, let's say you and I tomorrow, let's do a little project. Let's say you're my best friend. You can't do it. But he did.
Well, he had tons of charisma, which it does go back to, I think, what Tom was asking earlier, why do I think people are still interested in this case 50 years later? That's one of the things. I think Manson has way more personality than most of the people that get lumped into that category. And, you know, people go, oh, serial killer. Well, Manson doesn't even qualify by the clinical term of a serial killer. He doesn't even qualify.
Because he's never killed anyone.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean,
Well, not on.
I think
not,
he might
not
just couldn't prove it.
No.
Right.
There's no proven evidence. Yeah, there's no proven evidence that Manson himself ever committed a murder. There's some circumstantial evidence that he contributed to at least one, possibly more, but, you know, that's not the same as being a serial killer, which people want to call him and put him in that category, and he's just not. If you want to put Tex Watson in that category, Tex Watson fits into that category. And which is crazy because that's what, you know, it's crazy that people don't even think, most people you say Tex Watson, they don't even know who you're talking about. You know, Charles Manson, oh, everybody knows Evil Crazy Charlie, you know.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, realistically, Tex Watson's the one who did most of the killing. Who does qualify as a serial killer.
Absolutely correct. You are correct on that statement. I'm going to get a little cheesy here. I'm going to say even Oliver Stone, which was actually Quentin Tarantino, Natural Born Killers, did I get higher ratings than Manson? And Robert Downey Jr.? No. Hard to beat the king.
It is a great one.
You know, the great one, yes. And that's true. And even in his death, when Nick told me that he was doing a book on Charlie Manson, I'm like, and he started talking to me more about the book, and I'm like, Nick, please do this book right. This is going to be a fantastic book. I want to read it. I'm excited.
I think what makes this book unique, you know, there's like close to 100 books that involve the Manson case. I think what makes this particular book unique and different is that it is told more from a narrative. It's like if you were sitting down talking to a member of the Manson family from the 60s and he was telling you firsthand what happened. That's the way the book reads, as if you're talking down, you know, and he's telling you his life story and how he experienced and what he experienced during those times. And I put him, you know, I put him into all those real situations, and I try to tell the most accurate story of those situations that I can tell, because a lot of the stories out there, in fact, I would say 90%+ of the information that's in the general public about Manson is just not true. It's inaccurate. A lot of it was built on myth. A lot of it was built to help build a case against him. Some of it, as you're talking about him being the end of the 60s, a lot of that came back through, and it's funny how we can't get away from politics, isn't it? You know, you look at, you go, well, everybody knows Vincent Bugliosi, who was the prosecutor, brilliant attorney. I say in the preface of the book, it wasn't, and by the way, the one that wrote Helter Skelter, which is where most people get their information on this case, It wasn't his job to get to the truth. It was his job to get a conviction. So he did everything in his power to get that conviction. Finding the truth had nothing to do with his motive for the case or his motive for writing Helter Skelter. His motive for writing Helter Skelter was twofold. One, it was to make money and become a famous author, famous public speaker, which he accomplished. Two, it was to back up the facts of his case, because once something becomes public knowledge, general public knowledge, then it must be true, right?
That's what they say.
So what I do in this book, although I do it through the eyes of a fictional character in a fictional narrative, I tell what I have found through my research, through what other people who have been researching this case for years, who are nice enough to share a lot of their info with me, or I read from their books, and I did give them credit at the back, and talk to some of them. And what I am trying to do is get it truer to what actually happened. Now, was I there? Are the people that were there talking, that are still around to talk, that would know? No, they are not. Still, through police reports, through coroner reports, through autopsy reports, through talking to people who knew Manson personally very well, multiple people who were very close friends of Manson for many, many years, several of which were kind enough to share private telephone conversations between themselves and Manson from his cell with me. I feel like I got a very good story of what really happened and why.
Wow.
That's something.
I gotta say dedication, man.
And spoiler alert, it's totally different than what it says in Helter Skelter. It's a totally different narrative than what you've heard through the mainstream media, through mainstream books for the past 50 years.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
So
what is the biggest discrepancy?
Really not that one.
Being
a former journalist myself, what are the biggest discrepancies between the books?
I
was asking, what are the biggest discrepancies, say, between Helter Skelter and some of the other books in your book?
Well, most of them follow the Helter Skelter narrative, so you can probably throw about 75% of them in. If you've read Helter Skelter, you've read 75% of the books out there. And I'm probably being generous. It's probably closer to 85%. The killings were not random, for one. You know, they were painted as being random. They were definitely not random. They were where they were. They did what they did for reasons. And they had reasons for being at both locations. Those reasons were connected. That's another one of the things that's a misnomer, is that, you know, everybody said that the two killings, the LaBianca slayings on the 9th and then the Tate slayings on the 8th, that those two were not connected. Those definitely were connected. And I tell you how they were connected. And like I said, they intentionally were heading to both locations. I don't think, at least the first night, that they were going there to kill anyone. I don't think Manson told them at the ranch, hey, go kill these piggies up on the hill, as it's been said before. I think the killings happened as reaction to some other events. I don't want to give too much away. You got to read the book.
Read the book. Read the book.
But those are the major things is that I'll tell you why they were there, what I think they were really there, what my research has said that's really there. Can I say it's 100% true? No. A lot of the information came from people who were in the know.
Okay. Chuck, I do have somebody that believes in the book.
Okay.
Nicholas Gabrowski, I told you he's going to call in, Chuck.
Hi, here Nick. I am. Hey, Chuck.
I'm glad you made it through your documentary. I hope you learned some stuff.
Oh, no, actually, I had that playing in the background. I was working on some black bedsheet stuff. I just released the first book of the year, so now I'm on a roll.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right.
Yeah, David Gresky's Whistle Stop. So
yeah,
now
good.
I'm working on the next one, the one after that, and furthermore, and everything.
And,
so
and
but the
said,
documentary
said,
that I was listening to in the background, it was about mostly about why certain religions think that pigs are filthy and don't eat them at all. But, you know, it's a topic for another day. I bet you Charles Manson loved pork.
Actually, Charlie was mostly a vegetarian.
Oh.
The only times that they would eat meat at the ranch, now he was totally against wasting food. So if someone brought meat, or if they did garbage runs where they would go hang out behind the upscale supermarkets and stuff, and when the supermarkets threw away stuff that was beginning to go bad, or, you know, the top layer might have, you know, a loaf of bread might have a little mold on it or whatever, they would go dumpster dive, get their food from there, take it back, and then, you know, fix it for the whole commune. So if perchance they threw away meat that was still good, sometimes even on ice and stuff, it was just, you know, it had been there all day, and instead of the store putting it out again for the next day, they just tossed it in the dumpsters. So the girls would take it back to the ranch and they would cook it. Since Charlie did not believe in wasting food, then at that time he would eat it. But in general, he practiced a vegetarian lifestyle for most of his life.
Oh, wow. No hamburgers, no bacon. Everybody likes bacon.
Nick, you cannot eat bacon.
I'm sure there was some. There was definitely some there, I'm sure. But, yeah, in general, he practiced and promoted a vegetarian lifestyle.
I thought I saw some years ago somebody made a comparison between Anson and Hitler, and their similarities of vegetarian was one of them, and how they got their people to do things that they wanted
them
to do. Is there accuracy in that, or is that a fallacy?
It's accurate, but it also could be compared to millions of people.
Well,
you know, that could be, there's millions of people that do those things. I mean, you know, half
Hitler
the people you meet in your life is a manipulator.
Yeah.
You know, Hitler Hitler probably liked goose, though, I heard, because in the end his goose was cooked.
Oh, my God.
What a thing.
Or was it? Maybe
I can hear,
another
I can hear JL laugh in the background. I love JL's laugh.
Oh, man.
That was you.
Yeah,
again, I think that's some propaganda that was also pushed by Bugliosi, by the prosecutor. Is that, you know, Manson was fascinated with Hitler and Nitschke and all this stuff, when it, again, just really wasn't true. Manson was, he struggled, he had dyslexia, so he was not a super avid reader, so I can't see him reading the Communist Manifesto, honestly. Could someone have told him some stuff about it? Yes. Did he take classes? You know, he took the Carnegie courses when he was in prison. He graduated from the Carnegie Institute with, you know, so he definitely liked, but at the same time, he was a con man. And if you're a con man, then what do you want to do? You want to learn how you can con people better.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
now,
guys, that's not a major alarm for the world's going to end or Blog Talk Radio is going to end. That's the alarm that Nick set at this time every night.
Oh, you must be in the kitchen in there. Yeah, I haven't done anything to the clock yet.
Okay.
It's time for their medication.
I thought maybe somebody had an old
Space Invaders machine in the background or something. I thought Nick was playing Space Invaders on his Atari 2600 that he saved from being a teenager.
Hey, Charlie,
I was on the phone with my mom, and that alarm went off. She's like, "What the hell is that?" And I'm like, "Oh, crap, it's time to give them their medication," but they weren't here anymore. So that was sad. It's a sad alarm.
Anyways,
Nick, we got you here with Chuck. Chuck, you're here with Nick. What made you, Nick, say, "Oh, my gosh, I'm going to publish this book"?
Oh, well, that's easy. Number one, it was Charles Manson. So given that element, and I publish horror, and it's popular, that's what first got my attention, and then actually reading it. And number one, how well it's written, which is what I always look for. And if I can market it separately from all those other ones that are out there. So, you know, there's a lot, but, you know, number one, it's just up my alley. And number two, it's because of how well written it was. So, I mean, it's a big testament to Chuck's writing. It could be a Charles Manson book, but it could be a crappy Charles Manson book, and it wasn't that. It was an easy thing. And then we got hooked up because Chuck contributed to one of the Days of the Dead anthologies edited by Joe Moe that I published, and one thing led to another. So, you know, that's kind of how everything all hooked up and stuff. And, yeah. Yeah.
And Nick probably doesn't remember this because he deals with so many people and all, but he complimented my writing very much for the short story that he had published. And so when I contacted him and said, hey, I'm kind of working on this project, would you be interested? When I first told him, he's like, well, what, you know, tell me a little bit about it. And I'm like, oh, well, it's a Charles Manson book. And, you know, I gave him a rough thing. And his response was, there's a lot of Manson books. I don't know if I want to do this. Send it to me, and I'll see if I can hook you up with somebody. And then, like, 3 days later, I get a message back from him going, okay, I'm sending you a contract.
Change of plans. Okay, go ahead, Francie.
Oh, I was going to say, if Nick compliments you on your writing. Oh, hold on. Can we continue this? Because there's something I want to say. And Blog Talk Radio, we're going to have our after party, and we can still talk. But I want the fans to hear the song. Chuck, 1 second. Your song's number one.
Yeah, it was number one last week on the independent internet radio NM1 Music, which does independent music releases online. And, yeah, it was the number one power pop song in the country last week.
Well, congratulations.
And what is the name of it?
Yay.
It is called Everybody's Broken.
All right. I got it.
So changing gears.
Just for a second, because I want people that are listening to the show live right now to, Nick, nobody hang up. We'll get back to Charlie Manson. But I want people that are listening to the show live right now to hear the song. So, Chuck, give the introduction. Come on, sell it.
This one's called Everybody's Broken. It's on my brand new 4-song EP called Girls and Cars and Things That Matter. It's available on Amazon and on iTunes and Apple Music and Deezer and everywhere else that you can buy music online. Just search for Chuck W. Chapman, and it should pop right up there. So was that good enough?
That was perfect.
That works.
By the way, I like your look because you kind of look like Tom Cochran. I'm going to hit, it's like...
And I feel like I'm the only one who's ever felt this way. Late at night, wind blows my eyes. Well, I can't find words to say. Lost inside, without a purpose and without a doubt. You know it's just your foolish pride. Yeah.
thank you.
Dude, it's really good.
I like the
great
effect.
Stuff.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I like the effect you put on the end. I probably should have really ended it that way.
Yeah, I really like this song. It's like I said, right before it played, it kind of gives me that Tom Cochran. You know.
Okay. I'll take that.
I love Tom Cochran, and that's why I'm saying it gives me the Tom the Tom Cochran feel. I think it's an amazing song. Your vocals are on point.
Thank you. Yeah, I did all the vocals on there. I play guitar. I wrote all the songs. I play guitar. I did all the vocals, and I did the final mix on it and on the production. So it's, even though I had people play the leads and the bass and the drums, it's really a solo album, which is the first time I've done one of those. I've released a few things with bands over the years, but this is my first quote-unquote solo album.
Well, that's impressive.
Well, definitely good work. I mean,
thank you.
Great song.
Thank you, man.
No
yeah,
problem.
I really liked it, too.
Awesome.
I was very impressed. Chuck, I've seen you play guitar like on Facebook Live and stuff like that, but I never heard like a whole band background with you, so that was impressive.
It's a little different. I try to write for band. My stuff's really, I've done a few acoustic things, and I'm doing one actually this coming weekend, next Saturday out on the left coast there. You're the left coast, right? Yeah, I'm the right coast. Yeah, so So I'm going to be at the Santa Susana Park, and there's a little festival that's happening out there. And so I'm coming out and doing a set. So I'll be playing the stuff off the record. So if anybody's in the area, Santa Susana Park next Saturday, around noon to seven, I think, and come on out. It's a free festival. It's called Family Jams Day, and I'll be there. And there's also an awesome band called Indiana that's going to be there. So. Should be a good time.
Yeah, that sounds great. You know what? Before I forget this thought in my head, but you should write a song based on the book that's told through the perspective of somebody that was there with Manson.
That's an interesting concept.
Hey,
perfect segue you just set up, Nicola. I very well may do that for the soon to come audiobook release of Family Man.
I was going to mention that.
Just starting to record that this week, and have been given some permission through one of Manson's friends who I've also befriended, who is a wonderful guy named Ben Gorecki, who gave me permission to use some of Manson's actual music and recordings that he acquired. And so I will be using those also on the audiobook for Transition, actually some real music played and sung by Charlie Manson.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Now, that is
now speaking of which, something I've always been curious about, in terms of Manson and music, outside of the famous connection with Pet Sounds, has your research come up anything, possibly any other people within the area besides the Wilsons and the Beach Boys might have been associating with?
Oh, yeah. I cover that in about four or five chapters of the book. But to just to do a little bit of name dropping for you there, obviously Dennis Wilson. Terry Melcher, who was the previous resident of the CLO Drive House, which other people have hypothesized that because he supposedly rejected Manson's forays into the rock and roll scene, that the killings at the Tate House were in retaliation for Melcher's rejection. Totally not true. So we refute that in the book and explain how that's not true. But to not drop a few names for you, obviously, the Beach Boys, the Mamas and the Papas, Frank Zappa, Neil Young. So there's some off the top of my head, the big names that just off the top of my head I can tell you.
Well, I'm glad they mentioned Zappa, because I mean that's one thing I've always been, it's always been my own personal theory, because I can honestly see him kind of following the same wavelength as some of Zappa's thought process, you know? So
there are rumors. These are unproven rumors. There are rumors, however, that there's some Manson music recorded and buried in some of the early Frank Zappa recordings.
Well, no.
Really?
Wow.
Like that, it's a rabbit hole. You know, going back, we keep going back to the first question, but it makes sense in the fact that everything in this case ties into something else and takes you in on a different path. Again, that's what keeps Manson so interesting all these years, because he did have, you've got everything. You've got sex, you've got drugs, you've got rock and roll, you've got Hollywood. What else do you need? Murder, mayhem.
Hey, Chuck, is it true what they said about the Beatles' White Album being some kind of influence or on Manson, or is that just Bugliosi trying to add more fuel to the fire on prosecuting him?
To quote Manson, which I do quite often in the book, in fact, a lot of the conversations between Shep, the fictional character, and Manson are taken from actual conversations with Manson from other people. So a lot of the quotes attributed to Manson in the book when he's talking to Shep really are his actual words. To quote Manson on that, man, that ain't my generation. Bing Crosby was my generation.
Uh-huh.
So you got to think, you know, Manson was in his 30s. Manson was like, you know, early 30s at this time. I want to say 33, 34. I don't have notes in front of me. And I've honestly kind of stepped away from reading anything because I spent so long working on it.
I'm 15 years older than most of the others.
Yeah, he was easily 15 years older than most of the people there. I think he did like the Beatles. I think he appreciated the Beatles. I think in some ways he felt that they were attuned to each other. However, do I think that he worshipped the Beatles and that was – Helter Skelter wasn't even – Helter Skelter was a philosophy, but it wasn't a plan. It was not a motive for murder. Helter Skelter had zero to do with the murders.
Interesting.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say they tried to say that, but just, you know, like they've seen all kinds of clues in race war and all that, but that must have been in just a helter skelter with Bugliosi's.
Well, everything, again, everything ties together. Remember, Manson spent most of his life in reform schools and prisons.
Yep.
Never for any major violations, which also should raise a red flag when you think, okay, this guy went apeshit and started killing people. Because that's not generally what happens. People tend to escalate. Now, there's obviously exceptions, but in general, anyone that's familiar with serial killers, which, again, Manson's not, but with that, if you're assuming or thinking that he is, or, you know, justifying him as that, serial killers tend to escalate. If you look at Manson's crimes from the time he was a kid, like 6, 7 years old, until everything previous to the murders, into this whole situation, nothing was ever – he wasn't violent. Even in his psych evaluations and stuff for the prisons, in general, they said he wasn't violent. You know, it was all stupid stuff. It was stealing cars. It was taking underage girls across state lines. It was stealing government checks out of mailboxes. You know, it's petty criminal stuff. Running hookers, you know, it's petty criminal stuff. And generally, people don't jump from being a petty criminal to being the mastermind of some of the most notorious murders ever committed.
No, not at all. Do you think he truly had a messiah complex, like it was alleged?
No. I think that most men in their mid-30s that had a chance to be around people a good bit younger than him that looked up to him, he relished being kind of, I don't even like using the term leader in that sense, but I think he looked up to being, you know, of kind of the lead figure.
Center of attention?
Yeah. You know, and what musician doesn't want to be the center of attention? You know, what person that, you know, does that kind of thing. Like I said, if you write books, if you play music, if you're an actor, if any kind of entertainer, which Manson was, anybody that's ever saw an interview with him, any of the famous published, you know, Geraldo, Diane Sawyer, any of those interviews, they can tell you Manson's an entertainer. You know, so anybody that's an entertainer,
yes.
You know, anybody that's an entertainer, you're going to thrive on that attention. You know, you just got out of prison. You've spent most of your life in prison. And all of a sudden, you have access to multiple attractive young women. What are most men going to do?
Well, they said it's definitely not Disney World.
You know, when he gets out of prison and goes to San Francisco, it is like he's going to Disney World. Free drugs, free girls, free sex, free drink, whatever you want, it's there for you. The guy thought he had died and gone to heaven, you know.
It's the regular smorgasbord.
Yeah, I mean, only of women and drugs and alcohol.
Right.
Yeah.
Another misnomer, you know, Manson didn't like hard drugs. He smoked pot. He liked natural drugs. You know, obviously he was a marijuana smoker and seller. He was, he would do peyote in the desert. He would do LSD type drugs, you know, hallucinogenics. But when it came to things like cocaine and stuff like that, he didn't even want them to have them at the ranch because he said that wasn't, you know, that wasn't mind expanding. That was mind altering. He was all for mind expanding, but he was totally against mind altering substances.
Interesting.
Oh, wow.
And that's
a thing that makes Manson interesting is because you learn all these new facts about him every time you look at something. And the prison guards, I mean, Charles Manson, in his cell, he made a lot of artwork just out of his hair. He made a tarantula spider. And it wasn't a matter of the guards smuggling things into the prison. They were smuggling things out of the prison to on eBay made by Charles Manson.
Exactly. Those spiders were actually made out of his socks. He would pull the strings from his socks and do those. Scorpions were his big thing. He did several different animals, but scorpions were the main thing. And they're beautiful. They're amazing. I mean, I can't
they
even
are.
Imagine how the guy
I've
sit there and pulled his socks apart and did that. I mean, you know, so you got to give him credit. I mean, people can think what they want. Like I said, I'm not trying to convince anyone in this book that Manson was a good guy. He wasn't. He was a criminal. He did bad things.
You can. And it's like we talked about at the beginning. It's like, oh, my gosh, you can't say you love him or you hate him. I know when he passed away, social media is like, burn in hell, devil, and all this. And you're kind of thinking, poor guy.
It's wrong.
So
I mean, well, he was portrayed. Even on this show, we've already had the Hitler comparison. And there is no comparison.
There really is no comparison.
But he was into that category. And, you know, he was a very complex individual. He was a very intelligent in a lot of ways. He was very creative. Like I said, some of his art is phenomenally good. Some of his music, I think, is extremely good for what he had to work with. People hear a lot of his stuff, and they go, oh, he can't play guitar. That sounds like crap. Well, what these people aren't realizing is that he's doing this stuff in prison. He doesn't have access to guitar tuners. He doesn't have access to new strings. In fact, they're usually going to be nylon strings because, you know, they won't let him even have the steel strings usually. Occasionally they would let him have them later in life, I think. But, you know, for the most part, he's making do with what he has.
And
you know, some of the songs, I mean, the fact that the Beach Boys cared enough to record one of the songs, well, actually the songs, but and they were on the 2020 album, by the way, not the Pet Sounds album. So if anybody's looking for those, the Manson songs are on the 2020 album. And that now, the one, the primary one that you'll look for on there is one called "Never Learn Not to Love." That one was the one that it's credited to Dennis Wilson, but it's a Charlie composition. It was taken from Manson's song called "Cease to Exist." Dennis Wilson switched a few words around, and they changed the structure slightly and changed the melody slightly, but that's the Manson song, which does factor into the motive for the killings, by the way.
Wow. Now, I know, obviously, he's no Hitler, as we've definitely summarized without a doubt, but...
Yeah, because I was just asking a question, because there's some people have compared him to that, but...
Do you think maybe a safer parallel, a comparison could probably be possibly Jim Jones, only a few years later after all the murders?
Not really, because that puts Manson into cult leader, which is the other thing that he gets called and accused of being, which he wasn't as well. Again, people, especially people in our time, people literally from the late 70s especially through now, they see that, oh, here's this man and he has all these people, quote unquote, following him and living with him. That is uncommon now. There's places it still happens. There's people, it's still happening today. But it was extremely common in the 60s, the late 60s. Communes were huge. They were all over the place. In fact, they were all over that area. In California was notorious for them. There was multiple communes that happened at that same, around that same exact time, who had the same exact kind of situation, only they had much larger. A lot of these would have hundreds of people, quote unquote, following them. Where Manson at the most, at the height, would be around 30 to 40, and really more like a dedicated 15 to 18. So if he was this great cult leader, he really wasn't very good at it.
This is so impressive to me. Honestly, this is like the great... You've done your research, and I thought I did my research. In fact, when I was in college, and I took film as art, and one thing William said, "Say goodnight for me at the end, please." He lost his Wi-Fi. So, anyways, here's the thing. I'm getting messages. Very impressive. You are dedicated.
Yeah, if anybody's sending in questions or whatever, feel free. I will do my best to answer anything the best that I can.
Okay, here's a question for you, Chuck. I want to book you again because I want to pick that brain.
Well, certainly.
How about the 29th? Let's pick this back up on the 29th because I know that you got a lot to say. And I'm loving this. Ask Nick when he talks to me about the book, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, yes, yes. And then I got sick a little bit, and... you know, I wasn't doing the show, and he's like, hello, do a show, get Chuck on, Chuck, and I'm like, yes, I want to get Chuck on, I just got to get better. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I kept telling Francie, you got to do the show, we got to get Chuck on. I've been, promising him since almost a year ago. Yeah, since it came out last
September.
Things
went kind of crazy.
Yeah, they did.
And I got to tell you, Nick 100% believes in you.
I've
seen him reject stuff, and he's like, no. He was like, yep, get Chuck on the show. and we're revamping, and he's like, hello, I told you about Chuck. And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, I do want Chuck.
Well, sure, be glad to do it anytime. Maybe maybe we'll have a tentative release date on the next book by then, which will not be about Manson.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I want to try to get your next book out by the end of September.
That would be amazing. I'd love to have it by October. That would be great.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for.
And the shows, the conventions start again around here. I've got to come up, and I need to get let's get together off the air, Tom.
Okay.
Because, yeah, maybe we can swap some books and stuff. I'd love to read some of your stuff and, you know, look at some convention schedules and stuff, and maybe we could even share a table and make Nick chip in a couple of bucks on it or something.
Hey!
Oh, calling the publisher out on the air. I'm probably just got cut.
Okay.
The Wonder City Nightmares, like I said, is it's a nice laid-back, it's kind of a laid-back, cozy, intimate, you know,
it sounds like a cool show.
Convention.
Really,
it's in a Novi Sheraton hotel, and it's pretty decent. You know, it's pretty decent. So, you know, but yeah, I'm open to it. You know,
sounds great, man. Yeah, we'll talk some more off the air.
Okay.
Make a great movie is. Charles Manson is in prison, and he becomes friends with Michael Myers in prison, and they both have conversations, and Michael Myers wants to get out, and Charles Manson is trying to talk his wisdom, but they have a relationship.
We'll collab on that one.
Behind bars.
You get the permission, we'll collab on that one.
Yeah.
So, Chuck, would you be... I didn't know there was 5 weeks in August. Would you be interested on the 29th?
Sure, that should work.
All right.
It's something I'm not looking at my calendar right now, so just in case that something's up, I'll let you know, but that should be fine.
All right. Chuck, I'm going to do my best Southern accent, because I try to do the northern thing now, and Tom and you know, Tom is from the north, and he said that totally sucks. So I'm gonna try my southern draw on you. Are you ready?
I guess I'm ready.
Hey y'all, you know what? That is not a Playboy. Get out of the tractor trailer now. The tractor tire, that is not a Playboy. No, don't. Oh my gosh, I say don't. Okay,
Maybe you just need to stick with that nondescript thing you have going on there. Because you're kind of failing at the southern end of the northern.
I don't know where I'm from.
Well, like I said, just go with it. Go with that nondescript accent.
Get out of the... I've never had a southern draw. People in South Carolina were asking me, where are you from? Here? No. Okay. Hey, y'all! Oh, I do hate that word. Does that make me bad?
No, but it's a great word. Even Webster agrees that it's a good word now.
It's short for you all. You know what's funny is I took Spanish class, and my professor, Dr. Perez, I can say his name because him and I were still friends. After so many years of torture, he goes, ay, 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 Francesca, what is wrong with you? No wonder I can't teach you Spanish. You don't even know how to speak English.
I struggle with English, so I'll stick with it. I'll just try to perfect it before I move on to anything new.
Oh, my gosh, you should have heard my Spanish. It was terrible. I wrote on the chalkboard that, well, dry erase board, that I own the gas station. All my Spanish people were saying, you own a gas station? And I said, no, I like this gas station. And they said, no, you. Oh, I got so many problems. All right. This has been a great show. Chuck, you have been amazing. I promise when we get you on the 29th, I will not drink full. Oh, what do you think? Is it urine or sperm? So
organic. I've never tasted either, so I'll just have to defer to your judgment on that.
It's 180 milligrams of caffeine.
You're going to be up all night.
I am.
So, so Francie, are you saying your drink had a little wing to it?
Did you say wing or wing?
A little wing to it?
Yeah.
I think it's got a lot of wings. Wings. Char Char's going to yell at me. He's already pacing back and forth because he puts me to bed. Yeah, Nick. Do not open up that can of energy drink in the fridge.
Oh, no, I'm not into energy drinks anymore. The last time I had an energy drink, I went to this one place that had all kinds of different kinds of chicken wings, like buffalo wings and stuff. And I went in there and I bought a Red Bull, and then I still stayed at the counter, and the guy was saying, look, and I said, well, I'm waiting for my wings. It says Red Bull gives you wings, so I'm waiting for my order. You give me some free wings. I just, but never mind. Can't believe I said that out loud.
Honey, that was so cute. You see what I have to live with every day.
That is not something to market when you're actually serving wings. Oh, wow, what was that? I'm standing outside on the side of the house. I think I saw a possum, Francie.
Oh,
I think that was a baby
possum.
It's a baby possum. It looks like a big rat. Well, we need something to barbecue tomorrow, so no, I'm just kidding.
No, no.
Hey, there you go.
No. No.
We got dogs cooking in the microwave. I got dogs cooking in the microwave.
Sounds like a
wee
song
right there,
doesn't it? John, there's no dogs cooking. All right, we are about to be cut off. Love you guys.
Thank you so much for having me, and look forward to being back on in a few weeks. We'll pick this up.
Oh yeah, where can we? Before we all go, where can we find you, Chuck?
ChuckWChapman.com. You can find me on pretty much every social media at Chuck W. Chapman. So Chuck W. Chapman on everything. Also, the book is available on Amazon and all, let's say, BarnesandNoble.com, most online retailers, BlackBedsheetBooks.com, of course. The music is available on Amazon and also on all the online streaming platforms. And feel free to reach out to me on social media. I mean, I try to respond to everyone. Send me a message. Don't just send me a friend request, because if I don't know you, I probably am not going to approve you. But if you send me a message and tell me, hey, I heard you on the Francie show, or hey, I'm interested in your book or music or whatever, then I definitely will approve you. I just like to have people tell me why they're sending me this request so that I know I'm not getting, like, you know, weird pictures.
I'm going to send you a friend request, so.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely do that.
I'll do that.
All right.
So I can get through to my stuff.
And I promise, Chuck, I promise I will not drink bull sperm or urine. We got to figure that part out. Next
I
show.
Think that would probably be good for your health for you not to do those things.
Yeah.
Yes, it would, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Especially
I'm,
if you're doing
I'm
it freshly.
I'm tired. I'm sitting here bouncing my legs.
I'm sure drinking the canned version is better than trying for the fresh version, but still, I think I would stay away from that.
I'm going to drink a pumpkin spice. Okay, okay, okay. Good night, everybody.
Frank is not going to sleep for a week.
Good night.
I probably night. Will not. I can feel my heartbeat.
At least you know you're alive.
There you go. That's the bright side. See, that's
true.
Me. We got no money.
Yeah, that's
well,
a good thing. That's like, you know, as long as you're screaming, you know you're still alive.
There you go.
I tell myself that every day.
Exactly. Words to live by.
That's a beautiful day. All right. Love you guys. This has been great. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you, Chuck, for being here. I loved it. Thank you, William. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Nick. Jay Apatello. Yeah, he fell asleep. Not because of the show.
I'll try to be more exciting next time.
All right. No, you were great. You were a great guest. You were fantastic.
What is all this factual stuff? I don't want to hear that garbage. Give me some fiction.
I'm looking forward to it. I cannot wait to have
you back
on show.
We're going to start putting some of Francie's shows on YouTube too. We're
awesome.
going to go back into the archives and add visual stuff to go along with it. It's going to be groovy.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Oh, which, by the way, I've got the number of views to set up to where I can make money on YouTube. I just need the subscribers.
I'm
so
in the same ballpark
you want
with my
to
channel.
Subscribe, I'm only a few hundred subscribers away. If
okay.
you subscribe to me, I'll subscribe to you.
Perfect.
I said that I got a video that's like 23,000 views.
Yeah, my biggest one is I have put one up of I spent a night in the Lizzie Borden house and did a documentary from there, and I think I'm into like 17,000 on it. So it's done really well.
Nice.
Wow.
And I'm going to be spending a night, or not spending a night, I take that back. I'm going to be hanging out for a few hours next weekend at a place called the Omen House, which is owned by a guy named David Omen, and it is three houses down from the Tate residence on Cielo Drive. So I'm actually going to be on Cielo Drive next week, so which is kind of cool.
Nice.
I thought it would be the Omen House from the movie The Omen.
Yeah, that's what everybody thinks. That's why I had to clarify that real quick. So, but yeah, it's really cool. I mean, Ghost Adventures has done stuff there, and you know, every one of the big TV shows have been there. It's an interesting place. They claim it's a portal and has multiple hauntings going on there, including supposedly the ghost of Sharon Tate. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what goes down there.
That'd be great. So you should leave a copy of Family Man behind.
I've already told David, the owner, that I would definitely bring him a copy. So there will be one in there.
Groovy. That way, if Sharon Tate is in there, she can flip through it too.
Yeah, she may tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. So, no, unfortunately, she wouldn't. Unfortunately, she wouldn't know either. I think she was more kind of caught in the crossfire of other people's plans, other people's things. I think she was, for the most part, an innocent victim. Not everybody was, but I definitely think she probably was for the most part.
Yeah. Well, not everybody is either, in general.
Right. Yes, I'm not saying that anybody brings that sort of thing on themselves, but sometimes you put yourself in situations that open you up to worse things than other people put themselves in those situations. So Yeah. Like I've always told people, I will never get a DUI because I will never drive drunk. So, you know, if you do drive drunk, then you're in a lot higher percentage of getting a DUI than I am.
Yeah.
Awesome.
If you.
Awesome words to live by.
And if you get drunk, you're in a higher percentage than I am. So that's what I, you know, like I said, nobody brings murder, obviously, or anything like that on themselves. But a lot of times the situations people put themselves in contribute to bad things happening to them.
You know, one thing that was funny, me and Michael Carlo, you've heard of Five Points because you live in South Carolina. You know what Five Points is, right?
In Columbia?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've played many.
Yeah, it's
many
like a mile worth of bars. Yeah, and
yeah,
Michael Carlo, and I was 21. Michael Carlo's never been to Five Points. He heard of it. I did not drink that night. We got a flat tire, and Michael Carlo did drink that night. I was a driver, and we got a flat tire, and he had that van, and the spare tire was underneath the van. And I was trying to get the spare tire out to put it, and we got pulled. And in the van, in the cooler, in the back, very back, they found open bottles of wine, and we were drinking it. And, yeah, they were pressing us, and I had to pour out the bottles, and I did not know that they were there. And Carlos was like, no, stop pouring those out. Carlo, I'm not going to jail. I'm driving. Dad, don't know where that came from.
Yeah, I used to play a place down there called the Elbow Room. I don't know if you remember it. It was a very cool little venue down there, right there in the middle of Five Points.
I do remember that.
Did they serve elbow macaroni?
Yeah, I wouldn't have eaten there, but it was a good venue. It was a good place to play. They always had a pretty good crowd, and you know,
the
so
elbow room was
when it got really crowded, did it have any elbow room?
It did not, and I really think that was probably where the name came from. Totally spitballing here, but I'm imagining that's where it came from. It's always so tight in there that you barely have any elbow room.
That was the two-story bar, right? And the staircase to go upstairs was so small.
There was a downstairs. I think that was just where people went to smoke dope and stuff. I don't think there
was,
the main club was street level, but it did have a basement that had, like, you know, I went to
the elbow room. Rockefellers, that's where Hootie and the Blowfish got their start.
That is one of the places, yes it is. We used to play those same clubs. I played there the same times they did. So
what?
Missed it by that
much. What?
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
Okay.
Hey, listen.
Completely.
Listen.
Wait. What?
Francie.
What?
If it was a Mexican archery place, it would be called the Elbow.
No. You don't know how big Rockefeller's what? What? That's where Hootie and the Blowfish got their start. What? You played at Rockefeller's?
Well, it was one of the many places.
Oh,
no,
my
we
God.
Played at a lot of the same places that they did. They did the same club circuit we did. We played the good old Money in Rock Hill, which on Darius Rucker made famous by, I think it was an MTV interview or something. Someone said, what's the best part of, you know, signing the record contract and getting famous and all? And he said that we never have to play the elbow or never have to play the money ever again. So
Yeah, they played the elbow room too.
Oh, I'm sure they did, yeah. I said we were on the same circuit pretty much, and they had a great formula. You know, they had a very talented black singer that did not sound black, and that's worked forever. You know, I mean, that's what one of the big things that got Elvis people interested in Elvis was, you know, it's a white boy that could sing black music. You know,
and, Madonna, the record company didn't want to let the public know that Madonna was white because they wanted to book her as R&B. Boogie and the Blowfish, Darius Rucker, rock me, baby, like a rod and wheel. I don't like
You love that song.
Okay, no more bull sperm for you. You got to cut her off, Nick.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, no more of that. I can't believe that you drink all that. I just cannot believe it.
Okay.
Are we still on? The show's not still on, is it?
We're after party. This is... All right, let's cut it out because you are... It's 1 o'clock your time.
Yes, almost.
All right, Chuck. I'm not going to go to bed for a while.
Well, I'm going to be
good
up for
night.
A while, too. It's the deadline.
Good night. Thank you so much for having me on. It was a lot of fun. We'll do it again soon.
All right.
Awesome.
Thank you. I was... Okay.
Awesome.
I found... Good night. Don't...
Good night.
Good enough.
Good night.
Night, everybody. Night, John Boy. Night, Mary Ellen.